Jayam Shri Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paravajakacharya Satara His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. His Divine Grace is Kambi Bhikti Found Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Hare Krishna, my obeisances to all of you. Thank you so much for being here in this, and being here and being part of this wonderful Krishna house. Up north we call this the Krishna House 2 or Krishna House South, because since the 80s there was a Krishna house in Columbus. It was since the late 60s. They started in 69, but actually in the 80s, they just formally began calling it the Krishna House. And it just became the name, you know, as opposed to the Krishna Temple, you know. So then we were really happy to hear there's another Krishna House, because I think it's a very user-friendly, you know, when you want to invite somebody to the temple, it may kind of make people uncomfortable if they're thinking, well, here's another religion, and maybe that's not going to set well with my religion. But if you invite them to the Krishna house, it's like, you know, user-friendly, visitor-friendly. So continuing with the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, the ninth chapter. And we're reading today, beginning verse text 28 through text 31, and we'll chant text 30. So, Dharmatakam, Dharmatakam, Moksham, Cha, Sahopayam. We'll chant. When you're reading a verse by verse, do you read the Sanskrit or you just read the verse? Okay. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Dharmartha kama moksham cha. Sahopayan yatamune. Anakyane tisheshu. Varnayam asatatvavit. Translation. Then he described the occupational duties of different orders and statuses of life, citing instances from history, for he was himself well acquainted with the truth. Purport. This is a fairly short purport. Incidents mentioned in the Vedic literatures, such as the Puranas, Mahabharata, and Ramayana, are factual historical narrations that took place sometime in the past, although not in any chronological order. This is actually a very instructive purport, because quite often there are questions about the histories that are being presented in Bhagavatam, because sometimes they appear to be out of sequence. So here's the explanation for this. First of all, it's factual histories that took place sometimes in the past, although not in any chronological order. So here's how that works. Such historical facts, being instructive for ordinary men, were assorted without chronological reference. Besides that, they happened on different planets, nay, in different universes, and thus the description of narrations is sometimes measured by three dimensions. We are simply concerned with the instructive lessons of such incidents, even though they are not in order by our limited range of understanding. Bhishma Dev described such narrations before Maharaj Yudhisthira in reply to his different questions. In text 29, Dharmam pravatatastasya sakala pratyuspashtikaha yoginas chandramrityayor vanchitas tuttarayanaha While Bhishma Dev was describing occupational duties, the sun's course ran into the northern hemisphere. This period is desired by mystics who die at their will. Purport. The perfect yogis, our mystics, can leave the material body at their own sweet will at a suitable time and go to a suitable planet desired by them. In the Bhagavad Gita 8.24, it is said that self-realized souls who have exactly identified themselves with the interest of the Supreme Lord can generally leave the material body during the time of the fire god's effulgence, and when the sun is in the northern horizon, and thus achieve the transcendental sky. In the Vedas, these times are considered auspicious for quitting the body, and they are taken advantage of by expert mystics who have perfected the system. Perfection of yoga means attainment of such supernatural states, supermental states, as to be able to leave the material body as desired. Yogis can also reach any planet within no time without a material vehicle. The yogis can reach the highest planetary system within a very short time, and this is impossible for the materialist. Even attempting to reach the highest planet will take millions of years at a speed of millions of miles per hour. This is a different science, and Bhishma Dev knew well how to utilize it. He was just waiting for the suitable moment to quit his material body, and the golden opportunity arrived when he was instructing his noble grandsons, the Pandavas. He thus prepared himself to quit his body before the exalted Lord Sri Krishna, the pious Pandavas, and the great sages headed by Bhagavan Vyasa, etc., and all great souls.
Obeisances to you.
So I'm going to focus on this next coming verse. So I'm just going to continue. And this was the verse that I thought we could all chant. Tadopasamhritya girasahasranir Tadopasamhritya girasahasranir Tadopasamhritya girasahasranir Vimukta Sangam Manadi Purushe Vimukta Sangam Hariya Manadi Purushe Vimukta Sangam Manadi Purushe Krishne Lasapita Pate Chaturbhuje Krishne Lasapita Pate Chaturbhuje Purasite Milita Drivya Dharayayat Purasite Milita Drivya Dharayat Purasite Milita Drivya Dharayat Purashtite milita drivaya dharayat Purashtite milita drivaya dharayat Rus neva satita pater chater muse. Puras ke vilita drigo yagariyat. Rupa samritya virasahasyane Vimukta sangvam anari pruse Krishne vasatita pate chaturbhuse Purasite milita devriyata hayat. Anyone else, ladies? Word for word. Ta-da. At that time. Upasamhritya. Withdrawing. Gira. Speech. Sahasrani. Bhishmadev, who was expert in thousands of sciences and arts. Vimukta Sangam. Completely freed from everything else. It was also the name of a very nice godbrother of mine. Mana, mind. Adi Puruse, unto the original personality of Godhead. Krishna, unto Krishna. Vasat Pita Pate. Decorated with yellow garments. Chatur Bhuje, unto the four-handed original Narayana. Purha, just before. Stite, standing. Amilika, widespread. Drik, vision. Vyadareyat, fixed. Translation. Thereupon that man who spoke on different subjects with thousands of meanings and who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men stopped speaking and, being completely freed from all bondage, withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. Purport. In the momentous hour of leaving his material body, Bhishmadev set the glorious example concerning the important function of the human form of life. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. And this was put in italics because it's so important, so I'll read that again. The subject matter which attracts the dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. Therefore, if one is absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, he is sure to go back to Godhead without any doubt. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 8:5-15. So now we can go around the room and each one here and there can read each one of these next from 8, from 5 to 15. Somebody.
6:5. And whoever at the time of death quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt.
Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail.
Therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt.
He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of
Godhead. A little louder.
He who meditates on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, Arjuna, is sure to reach me.
One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and being transcendental is beyond this material nature.
One who, at the time of death, fixes his life air between the eyebrows and in full devotion engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I can pass the mic to the lady side.
Persons learning the Vedas, who utter Omkara and who are great sages in the renounced order, enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation.
The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagement, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head. One establishes himself in yoga.
After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets.
For one who remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service.
After attaining me, the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection.
Sri Bhishma Dev attained the perfection of quitting his body at will and was fortunate enough to have Lord Krishna, the object of his attention, personally present at the time of death. He therefore fixed his open eyes upon him. He wanted to see Lord Krishna for a long time out of his spontaneous love for him. Because he was a pure devotee, he had very little to do with the detailed performance of yogic principles. Simple bhakti yoga is enough to bring about perfection. Therefore, the ardent desire of Bhishma Dev was to see the person of Lord Krishna, the most lovable object, and by the grace of the Lord, Sri Bhishma Dev had this opportunity at the last stage of his breathing. Let's quickly read this last verse that I was assigned. Vishudaya Dharanayata Shivastadikshayaida Shukatayura Shaman Nivriti Savendriya Vriti Viramastiswavajanyam Vishajanjanardhanam. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material inauspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. Thus, all the external activities of his senses was at once stopped, and he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. Purport. This material body is a gift of the material energy, technically called illusion. Identification with the material body is due to forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with the Lord. For a pure devotee of the Lord like Bhishma Dev, this illusion was at once removed as soon as the Lord arrived. Lord Krishna is like the sun, and the illusory external material energy is like the... In the presence of the sun, there is no possibility that... can stand. Therefore, just on the arrival of Lord Krishna, all material contamination was completely removed, and Bhishma Dev was thus able to be transcendentally situated by stopping the activities of the impure senses in collaboration with matter. The soul is originally, and so also the senses. By material contamination, the senses assume the role of imperfection and impurity. By revival of contact with the, the senses again become freed from material contamination. Bhishma Dev attained all these transcendental conditions prior to his leaving the material body because of the presence of the Lord is the and of this is the verdict of he is the supreme entity and living entity among all the eternal living beings. And we have a little asterisk down here. Who would like to chant this verse? So this is Katha Upanishad. And he alone provides all necessities for all kinds of living beings. Thus, he provided all facility to fulfill the transcendental desire of his great devotee, Sri Bhishma Dev, who began to pray as follows. So tomorrow you'll be hearing these beautiful prayers coming from the heart of a pure devotee at his time of departure. So, in this particular chapter, we are studying a very fascinating topic, that being death. And, of course, we all accept it. You know, we hear daily here in the Krishna house and other Hare Krishna places, we hear the daily mantra, birth. Yeah, so we hear this topic a lot. And for those who are in a younger, healthier condition, it kind of seems like maybe there's a distance between you and this mantra. I don't know. You don't remember your birth. And, you know, the old age and the disease haven't attacked yet. And death happens to other people. You know. Does anybody know the technical definition, not our transcendental definition, but the technical definition of death? Well, that's debatable now. That was not accepted anymore because they can jumpstart your heart and boom, there you are again, up and going. That's pretty much that right now. That because the definition of death has actually been slightly modifying and changing over the years. What he just said is it's the irreversible cessation of electrical activity to the whole brain. So they've now even used the word whole brain. That's the pretty much accepted standard. Also included in that is the permanent termination of biological functions that sustain the living organism. But this is a lesser definition because now you can do things to, you know, like the heart stops, boom, they'll you know, give you a thump and they have these defibrillators and they start it up again. You know, give you the oxygen or mouth to mouth, you start breathing again. But the permanent termination of these functions with the irreversible cessation of electrical activity in the brain, this is like death. So there are symptoms of death that go in a progressive order. These are like, and in fact, there's, you know, people are really interested in death nowadays. And there's, you know, if you go and look in bookstores, they have books about death. It's a fascination. It's a topic of fascination. I mean, it used to be people were deathly afraid of death, didn't want to hear the word, didn't want to hear it. People are looking into it now. And they have, even in the medical profession, they're recognizing that death is definitely something they can't always prevent. And so they have made situations now that accommodate the act of dying as being not a defeat of their, usually if some of your patient died, that was, you know, like a defeat of your medical ability. But now they've kind of understood it's inevitable, and they've made provisions like in the form of hospice or palliative care for people who are dying or about to die or in a terminal condition. So then there's even detailed descriptions of what is termed the act of dying. So a person, factually speaking, from the moment one takes birth, you are dying. Each breath you take, you're one breath closer to your departure from this body. But that is something people maybe find a little hard to understand initially. But when people actually get into it's, you know, an active state of dying, it means it's going to happen, it's irreversible, then there's some little gauges that let you know what's happening. And then there's like symptoms that can actually determine this is it, finished. So those symptoms are scientifically given, and we can agree with they don't contradict anything we believe. That's the cessation of breathing. There's no pulse, you know. Then it's called pallor mortis. That's the technical term. But anybody who leaves their body within 15 or 20 minutes, you know, we're all kind of bright-cheeked here, and there's some, you know, little tinges of color in the body. But within 15 to 20 minutes after death, this color kind of goes away. This paleness comes in. So it's called pallor mortis. Sometimes you'll see a person, they'll say, you're white as a sheet. You're like the living dead. You know, somebody reads a big shock, and they're just blood leaves their face, and it's like white, deathly white look. Now, interestingly enough, this practically happens to everybody, but in the science of determining who is or isn't a saintly person, one symptom of a person who might be a possible candidate for sainthood is that after they leave their body, they actually don't lose their color. They remain somehow looking as if they're still there. And I've personally seen this also with devotees. When God's sister would left her body, I didn't get there on time. It was many, many, many hours later. And she looked exactly like she was asleep. She didn't have that death white face. You know, the color was still there. So, but still that happens. And there's called liver mortis, which the blood settles in the lower part of the body. And then there's called algor mortis, where your temperature, like our life temperature is, 98.6, something like that. So time of death, that decreases down. And then there's rigor mortis, which you've probably heard of, where the limbs stiffen. And generally, if you're, you know, in the Western tradition and most traditions, body is left, you know, flat out. But in some cases, like for ourselves, if the person is a saintly person, is prepared, you know, they're going to be put in samadhi, then usually they're put in a position, lotus position. So that has to be done generally quite quickly. But I was told, you know, there's been cases of devotees where it didn't happen quite quickly, and yet their body didn't enter into rigor mortis. And also in different saints that have passed through the years in different traditions. So that, and then the final one is, does anybody have a guess after all this? You know, your rigor mortis, your temperature's going, you're white as a sheet, mm-hmm. Breathing, decomposition, that's right. And this, again, practically everybody, but occasionally with very rare saintly souls, it doesn't happen. There's some Christian saints, I can't remember offhand, somebody may know, but they're in there now. They're kept now in like a sealed chamber, but they have like, you can view them, and they haven't decomposed, and they've been dead for hundreds of years. And they didn't go through some artificial, you know, you can make a body appear like it's like okay, but it's actually cosmetic, you know, it's a cosmetic thing, or some herbs or chemicals are put in it. But in extremely rare cases, there is this natural state of non-decomposition. But it's, you know, it's not common, and it doesn't remove the fact that the body is no longer occupied by the person and is a dead body, you know. We were given here a really wonderful, prescription. I call it the prescription for death. Just like if you have pneumonia. I've had pneumonia numerous times, and I always get this prescription with, you know, this particular antibiotic to knock it out, you know. And then you have to follow that prescription to get well. So the ultimate prescription is a prescription for death, how to prevent death. But we're thinking prevention and death. You know, I'm not going to die, but you'll definitely leave this body, but you will continue. And that was the prescription for perfect death is given here, that everybody will continue, but what kind of body will they continue in? You know, we have these gyms, these bodybuilder gyms. And I'm sure you have quite a few here because, you know, it's a university town, and young men like to pump up their temporary bodies in hopes of, you know, remaining really in good shape forever and enjoying. So they're in there working out like anything, and the ladies too. But actually, there's another type of bodybuilding, and that's the kind we're interested in. And that is, we're preparing for our next body. Now, our next body will hopefully not be like this body, full of blood. You know, here's the other little mantra that some people go, ooh, they have to say that, you know, blood, stool, pus, bile, liver, urine, you know, ooh, that's icky, you know. I remember when, you know, the Sarivara Vijayal, and he said, the material body is senses and the senses are neck towards the paths to death. This one young girl came to my ashram one time. She got so upset we'd say that, you know. She goes, I want to rewrite this. So she, I said, okay, let's see what you come up with. So she came out with this material body was a wonderful place of pleasure, and the senses were the way to enjoy it. And anyway, I said, Julie, that's very nice, but I think I'll stick to the authority issue of the Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the prescription, the anti-death prescription, is that upon quitting this body, one will never again return to this material world. And then here comes the bodybuilding part. We'll have our eternal spiritual body. So just like these people are working out like anything to get a enhanced current body that isn't going to last. It isn't going to last, you know. I mean, as long as they last, if they last into adult, just like, you know, you were probably once a very young person. So is, and guess what? So was Brahmatirtha. And me too, you know. And if you see pictures, I mean, I've had people look at pictures of me and they'll go, oh. And then they look at me, you know, oh. You know, like Prabhupada said, don't worry, this will happen to you too. But in that, here it's explained that, you know, this material body is actually an illusion. It's not that it's not real, but it's a temporary reality. So why get caught up in something that's not going to last? Let's connect, if we want to live, with something that's permanent. And let's prepare for that permanence. And that's what's happening. That's what's being discussed here. And that's what Bhishma Dev has done. And it's explained how he was knowledgeable in thousands of topics. He could teach thousands of topics. And he spoke on thousands of topics. And he was active in so many ways. But now, at the time of death, put it all aside, threw it away. He didn't, you know, wasn't a second thought, and firmly fixed himself upon the object of his real heart's desire. And by the Lord's mercy, he was there. Krishna was there, right in front of him. You know. Now, Krishna's always in front of people in one way or another. Just like Krishna was in front of Hiranyakashipu. But Hiranyakashipu could only see fear personified, death personified. He wasn't seeing the beautiful face of the Lord. So according on the upon the development of the consciousness, after all we're the Krishna consciousness movement, so it's all about consciousness, one will see Krishna as he is. Or we may see Krishna in another form. But definitely you're going to see Krishna at the time of death. So here Krishna and showing the perfect way through the example of Bhishma Dev, who then thought of Krishna in his Krishna form, as Krishna himself explained in Bhagavad Gita. So that was these points, 5 through 15, the wonderful prescription for the perfect death. Like, they had this movie one time called The Perfect Storm. And so we have the perfect death, but it's a wonderful, blissful thing. And time is flying, so I wanted to mention, because there hasn't been, you know, at your age, probably so much death experiences for most of you. Of course, recently there was a departure of one of the young ladies who had served you at the Krishna house. And it was, you know, not a planned departure. It was kind of a shocking departure, the sudden departure of Stacy. So that must have been, I can only imagine how impacting that must have been, and kind of eye-opening, and maybe you say a wake-up call. But as life is, we can often soon forget these things and drift back into our, you know, comfort zones. And, well, that's a long time down the line, you know, I still feel pretty good zone. Nonetheless, you know, hello, I'm still here, I'm Mr. Death. At one point, a god sister of mine had a young daughter, and the girl's, she was 14 years old. Her name was Manisha, and she was diagnosed irreversibly with a type of cancer. So the doctors were telling her, it's, you know, nothing we can do, but we can try this, we can try that, you know. In other words, we can experiment and torture your daughter. So her mother decided to take her daughter to Vrindavan. A 14-year-old girl. She hadn't even, you know, you can say had, but she'd had the, I was going to say she hadn't had life experience, but actually, you know, she'd been chanting and taking prasadam and performing devotional service, so she had that much life. So she was taken, and it happened to be Prabhupada was there at the time. So they were given darshan, and the mother was, you know, it's the mother and your daughter's in front of you and she's going to leave her body. So there is that, you know, emotional conflict there. And what should we do? Prabhupada replied, a very sober, simply chant Hare Krishna, that's all. But she's only 14 and she's going to die. What should she do? Mother was, you know, not... Simply remember Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, that's all. But the mother wasn't able to hear this yet. And she said again, but she's only 14. Prabhupada said, 14, 40, 100, death will come. Today or tomorrow, death will come. Simply chant Hare Krishna, that's all. And then again she tried, but I think she's afraid of the Yamadutas. And therefore I have told you, simply chant Hare Krishna. That is all. So some could say, well, that's kind of harsh, a little cold. I mean, the girl is only 14. She hadn't experienced life yet. There's the mother. But Prabhupada, out of deep love and compassion, was giving the highest remedy. And fortunately, the 14-year-old girl understood it. She got it. The mother wasn't as understanding, but Manisha got it, and she was able to follow that instruction to her departure, from what I'm told. So, today or tomorrow, so many years from now, so be ready. On another case, the girl had already departed, but it's a beautiful story because we have this, you know, it's always said, like, if you see the body and alive, it's beautiful and you want to enjoy it. You want to enjoy your body. You want to enjoy the life. But as soon as, you know, you see the dead body, it's, you don't want to see it. It's, and again, you know, when a young child, it's heart-wrenching. One god sister had gone with her daughter to Vrindavan to serve. And she was always including her daughter in her service. She'd make garlands or other things. The girl was about 10. And one night there was a darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And there was another little girl about the same age. And, you know, little children, they're not so able to appreciate sitting and hearing, generally not so able to sit and appreciate hearing philosophy. So they get restless. So, you know, you can either have something for them to do or... But the girls themselves decided they wanted to do something. And since the room involved was quite small, and okay, the mothers let them, okay. And then after the darshan, this mother took her girl, and she wanted to explain in language that her daughter could understand about what she had learned in this darshan. So first they sat, and they chanted around together, and the little girl kept falling to sleep. And it wasn't that late at night. She kept trying to wake her up. And then all of a sudden, she just fell over, dead, right in front of her mother's eyes. You can imagine the distress of this mother. You lose all sense of perspective. So she said the next few, you know, hours until the next day, it was like the devotees came, they were taking care of everything. And she just was like trying to, is this real? You know, she could see it was real, but was it real? What was happening? And as they came, they had put the body on a little palanquin. And they were coming from the guest lodge, and they were going to walk by Srila Prabhupada's quarters. And Srila Prabhupada himself was very ill at this time. Suddenly, they stopped for a moment. The devotees had gathered. They're waiting for the devotees to gather. They stopped for a moment. And suddenly, Prabhupada's servant came out with a beautiful garland that had been offered to Srila Prabhupada that morning. And he said, Srila Prabhupada wants to give this to your daughter. And then he told them, said, Srila Prabhupada said, you shouldn't cremate the body. Said, that is for older people. She's only a child. She's pure. She hasn't committed sinful activities yet. Simply offer her to the Yamuna. So they had this Harinam party with the little girl's body with the beautiful, loving garland bestowed by Srila Prabhupada to the Yamuna. And at that time, when the garland arrived from Prabhupada and was offered to her daughter's body, the mother explained to me, she said, a wonderful transformation occurred within my heart and mind, and all my confusion was immediately cleared up. Up until that point, she said she couldn't even see in front of her, you know, in front of her own hand. She was just so disturbed, her vision was even disturbed. At that moment, everything cleared, and then throughout the Harinam party down to the Yamuna. And then with prayers and great kirtan, they brought the young girl's body and they put her into the Yamuna, and they just kept chanting until finally all they could just see were the garlands off in the distance. And, you know, what a incredible experience for any mother. But she said it was the... Probably first, it was the first and probably one of the only times in her life she had actually experienced true peace because of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada gave her at that time and the understanding that her daughter had been perfectly protected. So, I also wanted to, now we're getting the end of the time, how Krishna does not forget his devotees. And, I want to tell two stories, and I'll be a little quick because I see it's 8:30, it's breakfast time. But I had a god sister who joined at a later age. Most of you have joined, and I joined. We were early in our, you know, in our teens or 20s. But she was in Venezuela, and Prabhupada came to Venezuela, and she met the devotees, and she immediately became attracted, especially after hearing Srila Prabhupada speak. And she had a family. She was an educated person from an aristocratic family. She put it all aside. Her family, because they were not sympathetic. But she put it aside. And she had read in the Bhagavatam how New Vrindavan was non-different from Vrindavan. So she decided she'll take her youngest son. The other children were older. Her youngest son, she'll go to this New Vrindavan. She came to New Vrindavan, and she was so attracted to the deities. And she became the personal seamstress for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And the outfits that she sewed with such love and devotion were so incredible. You could turn them on inside out. You could never see the seams. They were so beautiful. And she constantly meditated on the Lord's lotus feet, on his form, and on his activities with each stitch. As she got older in life, her eyes failed and she couldn't sew. She'd sit there with the sewing machine and she would cry in separation. She wanted to do this service so bad. She did it for over 17 years. And then she actually became diagnosed with Alzheimer's. We all know that means you lose your sense of who you are. So it was really interesting. Her son, and she would look at her son and she'd go, "You're not my son. My son is a beautiful little boy. You're a fat, ugly old man." I mean, you know, he would have to lock her in it, like, not lock her, but they have special daycare for adults to, you know, because if she would get out, she would wander away. She was it'd be dangerous. But sometimes even then she'd get out, and then she'd get picked up wandering in the streets or on the motorway by the police. And she, because she was from, you know, Venezuela, Spanish was her first language. She knew English perfectly well, but she had stopped speaking English. So the police would try to talk to her. She wouldn't speak in English, and she wouldn't say her name. The only thing she'd say was, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." So then they would bring her to the Krishna house. And we'd call her son, and, you know, they'd get together. So one day this happened, and I was there with her. And she was taking darshan of Radhanathabhar, whom she'd also sewed for. And I was watching her. I realized she wasn't just staring like a blank eye. She was really absorbing the beautiful form of the Lord. And I was I was struck with how she was really, you know, we say darshan, and we barely, you know, we look at the deities, and if somebody says 5 minutes later, "What color was the outfit? What color was the garland? Oh, they had a garland on? Oh, I don't know what color it was," you know. So she was really absorbed in this darshan. And I think she could sense how I was kind of looking at her with surprise. She turned to me in perfect English. She goes, "You may try to forget Krishna, but he will never forget you." At the time of her departure, which nobody knew when it was going to be. In fact, one other incident happened. At one point, we thought it was her departure. I came from New Vrindavan to Columbus. She was in this hospital, and her family came from Venezuela. They're all just wringing their hands, and, you know, Krishna sent her a nurse who used to come to the Krishna house for prasadam every day. So he totally understood the situation and was caring for her just like his own mother. Well, that was one thing how Krishna, you know, even though she was like apparently externally totally out of it. I brought a little instrument that I used to have, and I was just chanting. Suddenly she started going like this with her hands. So then the daughters, and then, "Oh," you know, in Spanish, "Mother, what do you want? What do you want?" And they kept, you know, like, "Can I get you this? Can I get you?" No, and she's not even responding to it. She's going like this. I looked at the nurse. I said, "Where are her beads? She wants her beads." Right, and I knew he'd know. He brought her beads. Immediately, she's like, peaceful. Started to, you know, she was fingering the beads. So I could see this Krishna consciousness, in spite of the external activity of the lost mind, you know, the dementia, the Krishna consciousness was there, and it was firm. And I could understand there was really nothing to lament for in her condition, you know, for the material observation that was, you know, what a sad situation. But no, she was completely connected. So at the time of the departure, which we didn't know when that would be, but she was back home. It was Sundar Arti, and her daughter-in-law had gone to the temple, and her son was home, and he was preparing dinner. He said all of a sudden, just turned off the stove, and he went to her bed, which was, they brought her bed right next down in the, like, next to the kitchen in this room, so that there would always be someone with her. He just went over to his mother, and he just started chanting. He didn't even think, "I'm going to chant to my mother." He just, it was like an intuitive force took him there, and he was chanting, and she left her body. So how, and right away he called the temple within moments, the devotees were all there and performing all the rites. But here was a person, you could say, well, you know, how did Krishna take care of her? Well, how didn't he take care of her? She was remembering him at the moment of death, at all through her life, and at the moment of death, there was a devotee who was right there chanting in her ear, giving her Krishna's holy name. So Krishna says that, surrender unto me and I will protect you. Have no fear. And so many examples. Now it's late. Otherwise I could give some further example. But have no fear. My god sister Ganga Mai, when she was diagnosed, this is it, terminal cancer, so much time to live. I went to see her and she was so blissful. She was reading Bhagavatam and she says, now more than ever these pages have come alive in my life, and I'm so grateful to Srila Prabhupada for preparing me for the last 35 years that I know what to do. You know, how many people do you see in their older age and they're just, you know, they don't even want to hear the big D word. It's so frightening to them because they don't understand it. So we have got so many wonderful examples, and as I mentioned the other day, Srila Prabhupada, who into the final breath was giving us beautiful purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam so that we too can continue our lives in perfection. So I was going to ask any questions, but you know, I don't know if there's time to ask any questions or if anybody wanted to comment. Pardon? Oh, okay. All right. Well, I wanted to tell one more. There's quite a few, but this one just happened very recently, within the last 6 weeks. When we first went to India, at Srila Prabhupada's request, my husband met this gentleman, Mr. Mafatlal, and he was a big industrialist, but we found out he was an extremely pious man. And he became a well-wisher. He was a Ram Bhakta, but he became a well-wisher of our movement, and in particular Srila Prabhupada. And his eldest son became a devotee, you know, full-on. Of course, they were full-on devotees. I mean, this man's house was huge. It had elevators. There was, you know, servants for everything. They had a beautiful temple room, and every day there was daily puja in this temple room. So now the man was, you know, in his late 90s. His son is in Vrindavan on Kartik Yatra with his children and grandson. The whole family's in Vrindavan. And the father had told the family at a certain point, I want to go to Chitrakoot. This is a place of Lord Ram. And the whole family had come. But then he said, you have to go now. I need to absorb. And, you know, families around, even if they're devotees, there's distraction. You have to go now. I need to absorb. I want to just be with Ram and Srila Prabhupada and his guru, whose name I don't remember. So, on one auspicious day during Kartik Yatra, when his family was in Vrindavan chanting the holy name at the feet of Giriraj Maharaj, the mountain, not my godbrother, he was in Chitrakoot, and it was time to depart. And he just folded his hands, and he goes, Jai Srila Prabhupada, Jai, and he gave his guru's name. He goes, Jai Lord Ram, Jai Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he left his body. So there's just never, you know, any reason to fear if we actually take the Krishna consciousness. The so-called death of this material body is simply to allow the soul to attain its real body, the transcendental body. And one devotee asked, and you may be thinking this yourself, what happened if at the time of death I'm not able to remember Krishna? What about sudden death? You know, like I'm just driving down the road and some crazy out-of-control truck whams into me and, you know. So one devotee asked Prabhupada that. What would happen? Prabhupada looked, he said, do you think Krishna is ungrateful? Do you think he's an ungrateful man? That he'll come to his devotee's aid. He sees this person here, his whole life, he's given his life to serving me. He's going to turn his back at the time of death because there was an incident for a moment and he couldn't, you know, remember Krishna, so-called. So we should have heart. Not that that gives us license to, you know, being devotee means we're practicing. It's a daily occurrence. We're daily absorbing in Krishna's activities. We go to school for Krishna. We take our exam for Krishna. Because we want to serve Krishna more and more and better and better. So everything we do is for Krishna. There's no question of a material life for us. So do you think Krishna, in such a case, will ignore you? And of course we have the wonderful example of Grampy. Such a wonderful story. I didn't mention it because that's her story, but it's just a wonderful story. And, you know, Prabhupada said, proof is the pudding. And, you know, just how wonderful that Krishna at any time can enter someone's heart through his representative, the devotee. You know, often we hear the term pure devotee. And you should understand that there are different levels. It's not that there is only one definition for a pure devotee up there. I'll tell you a brief story that when devotees went to walk with Srila Prabhupada, one devotee was Tamal Krishna. He goes, Srila Prabhupada, are there any other pure devotees like you on the planet? Are there any other pure devotees? Prabhupada turns to Upendra and he goes, this is like in 1967, like March, somewhere around that. He turns to Upendra and he goes, how many of us are there? So about, you know, maybe 50, so Prabhupada terms, he goes to the one that asked how many pure devotees, he goes, about 50. So the idea of being anyone who gives their life to the service of the Lord is a pure devotee, but then there's gradients of purity. So you're all pure devotees, now you must become more pure devotees. Hare Krishna.